April 21st, 2023, it's a Watt from Pedro show.
Thank you.
For Pedro Show, happy Friday. Started off with, oh yeah, happy B-Day, Ig. 76 B-Days, orbits around the sun. For the bow of the boat, Ig. I remember playing the bumper shoot, I think, in Seattle, because the Devo guys couldn't play, so the Stooges stepped in. Beautiful gig. Ah, you can tell people I'm not man alone because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got Ryan. Ryan, I want to say your name right, so don't want to fuck it up.
Yeah, sure. It's
Carraher?
Carraher.
Okay. A little Irish.
A little bit.
But anyway, we got to give a big credit to Randolph for making the connect and stuff. And I love the stuff you gave me. I want to learn about your journey through music. So please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Yeah, absolutely. So everything kind of started with the guitar. My family wasn't very musical, but my dad would always kind of play for fun around the house. He had this kind of really old Yamaha classical guitar. The fingerboard was so worn from all of his years of just playing it for fun. And the first kind of real music memory I have is walking into the garage one day and my dad was playing Ripple by the Grateful Dead. And I don't know what it was particularly about that song, but it just sounded cool to me. I must have been in like fourth grade or third grade. So I asked him to teach it to me.
Wow.
And that kind of started my journey there.
Was it one of them nylon strings?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he was self-taught?
Yeah, like he played a lot. Like during his youth, teenage years, he would always carry the guitar around and just kind of mess around with it. And that was, you know, one of the songs in his repertoire, along with, you know, Blackbird, that kept coming up over the years.
Paul McCartney.
I just dug it.
Paul McCartney.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. And it was the same nylon string. You said the fretboard was all worn. That's bitching. Where's it now?
He still has it. He still plays it.
Oh, great.
I've played it. It's a great guitar. Yeah.
There's something about that, right? Old wood. There's nothing like old wood. You can't replace it with new wood. You can,
absolutely,
but
not.
It's going to sound different. Yeah. So that answers my question about any instruments in the pad, obviously, there. And shit. And you got taught on it from him. That's beautiful. What about first record you bought with your own money?
Ooh, the first record I bought with my own money, that's taken me back.
Well, you know, when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money. That's why I asked that question. You know, like, what are you going to spend your money on? You ain't got a lot, right?
Yeah, I think it must have been, I forget the name of the album, but it was the Pantera album with Cowboys from Hell on it.
Okay.
And I was taken with the album cover with the rattlesnake on it. And
yeah.
I think I returned it because I wasn't ready for Pantera, but
I remember when I heard that, I thought right away of Henry Rollins. That guy, I can't remember his name, Phil or something. He kind of sings like Hank, you know, for Square John, like what? As far as that, you know, genre, I ain't good at genre anyway. Fuck it, music's music. So what about the first gig you saw?
Okay. This is always, yeah, like the first actual concert I went to was probably Nickelback, which yeah. I got a lot of shit for. But it was a good show. You know, I must have been in like seventh grade or something. It was the first like big actual rock show, you know, that I went to. But it, yeah, it was a good time, you know, with the family. Okay. So you had a good show.
And what about at school? Were you in the marching band or the choir, shit like that?
No, I mean, music was kind of my thing when I was young. Like, I was a pretty quiet kid in school, kind of kept to myself. But, like, music was what I would, you know, come home to, and I would just, you know, kind of practice all the time. And it was kind of more of an extracurricular thing I would do with friends as opposed to kind of the school circuit.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of times people don't even pick that shit, right? You just, it's a situation. Or schools fucking get rid of their programs. They don't even have it. So that's why
yeah,
I asked that question.
That's very true.
I'm just wondering out loud, you know. You know, everybody's got their own path, how they got to here through music. And so that's why I love learning about every individual's way, because there's so many different ways. So now I'm not talking about graduating, but in the afternoon after school, the bedroom band, the basement band, the garage band, you got into that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I used to do this program. It was called the School of Rock. It used to be called the Paul Green School of Rock. It's what the Jack Black movie is kind of based on, I believe, if I remember the lore correctly. But it was just kind of an after-school thing I would go to with, you know, other kids like my age that were into music. And, you know, we would learn, you know, classics. Like, we would spend 3 months working on, you know, Black Sabbath music or Led Zeppelin music or something and then perform it at a venue after 3 months. So I got, you know, a lot of my music socialization and performance skills, like, in that. But then I also kind of branched out and had some bands in the basement, I'm sure. You know, the family and the neighbors were very pleased with those high school metal bands.
Probably, especially the drummers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure they were thrilled when they would see the drummer walking through the door. Like, oh, I thought you weren't having band practice today.
Right. So, and you guys, were you like me and D. Boone in the 70s, you know, you just tried to learn shit off records. Or were you composing yet?
Yeah, like for when I was doing like my time at the School of Rock, like I would try to figure things out by ear, and I was taking lessons and kind of learning those tunes. And then when it was time to kind of do my own thing with the band, we started kind of writing our own music and, you know, trying to get some tunes together and playing them live.
Did some of these bands have names? Not the School of Rock ones, but the, you know, the homebrew.
Yeah, like, so I was, the high school band I was in was called Euthanasia, which turns out there was probably like 20,000 yeah, other bands with the same name. But it was a fun experience.
Euthanasia UK. That's how you can always fix that problem. Just put UK at the end.
Exactly, yeah. Or put like two A's or something at the end to change it up.
Right. Okay. You remember the first Euthanasia gig?
The first gig,
or
yeah,
maybe it wasn't any gigs. Maybe it was just a jam band.
We did some local gigs. Like, we did some like Battle of the Bands stuff. We played at like a VFW hall for some reason one time. I don't really remember the reason why. But we just did some local stuff, mostly attended by, you know, friends and family, that type of thing.
And the material?
The material was like progressive metal. I was really into prog metal in high school.
You're writing it, right? It's your version of that.
Yeah, so I was in it, the band, with myself, my brother, and then we had a drummer. So my brother and I would, my brother also plays guitar, so we would kind of spend time writing together and kind of collaborate.
Was it a trio?
Yeah, it was a trio. Sometimes we would have a bassist and a vocalist.
Yeah, I was going to ask, where's the fucking, you know, aiding a better of that poor lonely kick drum.
I mean, they were quite down-tuned guitars, like you 8-strings
oh,
and
yeah,
stuff.
That's
so
right.
The bass sometimes muddy it up. But we went through some different incarnations.
Okay.
I'm just curious, you know, because everybody's got to come from. But I'm glad you guys were writing. So your brother would write and you would write, and how would that be? Like collab or like this is your song, this is my song.
It would collab. You know, I came up with this riff, or he'd be like, I came up with this riff. Is there a way that we can make these work together? Or should they be together? Are they different pieces? You know, then we would get together with our drummer, whoever else was in the band at the time. It was kind of a revolving door situation. And kind of flesh those ideas out.
Okay. And mainly instrumental, or did you put in spiel words?
Yeah, like it started out mainly instrumental, and there was like a few months towards the end of that enterprise where we had kind of a vocalist with us.
All right, the enterprise. And this is still Euthanasia, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Look, you gave me this music here. Rain Eater. Let me play it.
Thank you. You knew what you were doing. You proved what you were proving. And it was sort of soothing to see. I couldn't say that it was new to me. Guess you could say, but yours grew on me. I venture not a purer thing you'd ever really want to even see. Motorboating through our lives, only gradually gaining rudimentary navigational skills, even sometimes offended by very friendly lighthouses. Very friendly lighthouses. You really got your groove on. You even donned the frou-frou frock. But now that you have moved on, I'll process priceless memories. I should have seen that you were stewing. I was absent when you blew, and by the time I knew it, was already in full fabulous swing. Motorboating through our lives, only gradually gaining rudimentary navigational skills. Even sometimes offended by very friendly lighthouses. Very friendly lighthouses. Hoping that we could.
love to have you to stay. I met a Misty Mason hanging out at an old man station, seeking in a soulmate, maybe more. She delivered a risible creed for all my invisible needs. With her, we ran at home and rotten to the core. I showed myself the door.
Thank you. sitting in a pink chair reading the afternoon newspaper.
Summer was rolling.
What's a monkey do all day? What's a monkey do all day? He just swings and swings and swings, swings away. What's a snake do all day? What's a snake doing all day? He just slithers, slithers, and slithers away. Oh, but what does man do all day? He just lies and he cheats and he steals away. He shakes hands with the devil, then they start to play. And that's what man he does all day. That's what he does all day. What's a spider do all day? What's a spider do all day? He just spins and spins and spins, spins away. What's a lion doing all day? What's a lion throughout ages roars and roars and roars, roars away. Oh, but what does man do all day? He just lies and he cheats and he steals away. He shakes hands with the devil, then they start to play. And that's what man he does all day. I said, that's what man he does all day. That's what he does all day. Now what's an oak tree do all day? What does an oak tree do all day? He just blows and grows and blows, blows away. What's a baby do all day? What's a little bitty baby do all day? He just cries and cries and cries, cries away. Cheats and he steals away, shakes hands with the devil, then they start to play, and that's what man does all day. I said, that's what man does all day. That's what he does all day. That's what man does all day. That's what he does all day. Thank you.
After Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off with Ryan Carraher and Eric Von Dam doing Rain Eater. Then Vic Chestnut with Friendly, Very Friendly Lighthouses. The Chunks, Fire Engines. The bass player is from Scotland. He wants everyone to know that. Cot O'Donnell with Cats and Clavier. Bill Nelson, this guy played guitar for Bebop Deluxe. Well, it was his band, and he's still making like 10 records a year or something in his pad up in Yorkshire part of England. And my old buddy Tony, pool cleaner friend, Tony Platten, he was way. I remember Bill Nelson was playing up in Hollywood at the Tower Records, so I took Tony up there to get his guitar pick. And Bill Nelson, man, it looked like he could floss with razor wire. He had some gaps between the teeth. But a very nice man. Then Jeb Lloyd Nichols, What Does a Man Do All Day? And we're always asking ourselves that, right? And Ryan Carraher and Eric Von Dam with Larkspur. Hope I pronounced that right. Okay, so this enterprise, what causes the termination of this enterprise?
Still talking euthanasia?
Yeah.
The
yeah.
band?
Well, that's where I heard that word, because I think you're the first one in 22 years to call their music project enterprise. My pop was on that nuclear aircraft carrier, he's a machinist, mate.
I mean, yeah, like that. I don't know why I call it the Enterprise.
It's just because maybe you got Watt's got the thesaurus out. That's how I knew how
it I kind of like it. but it just kind of like dissolved. We got older, and I started kind of getting ready for, kind of college auditions, and I was getting into jazz at the time.
So you're going to take music to higher education?
I did, yeah. Okay. I did it all the way through. I just finished my doctorate last year in music.
Great. What school?
So I did my doctorate at University of Washington out here in Seattle in music composition. Did the master's at Tufts University in Medford, kind of near Boston. And then I did undergrad at Berklee College of Music for jazz guitar over in Boston.
Yeah, because there's a Medford in Oregon, right? Otherwise known as Medford. That's what people told me. Spokane. It's like the southern version of Spokanistan, right? That's what locals tell me anyway. But, okay, so, and also projects kind of run their course. And then with your brother, is he an older brother?
He's a younger brother. He actually started before I did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So were you taking direction from him?
He has a better ear than I do.
Ah, that's beautiful. Didn't let that progenitor shit get in the way.
Yeah. We were, working together, and it was like a pretty kind of even playing field with us. And, he's always had a great ear. So it was a lot of fun working with him back in the day there.
Yeah. So, but now you move on. This is where you go back east. And you don't go to Berklee. I've had a lot of cats on the show that's gone to Berklee out there in Boston.
I did, yeah. I did my undergrad at Berklee College.
Oh, you did?
From Boston.
You did?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You got at Tufts, you got the master's. Okay.
Yep, yeah.
And what I hear about Berklee is a lot of good connects. I mean, there's some good teachers too and shit, but connects, right? You meet other music people.
Yeah, totally. that's kind of the main draw. I think is, the environment there, especially in Boston, where there's so many colleges and university kind of concentrated in a very small area.
Yep.
And they all have music programs. So there's always a kind of phenomenal community and a lot of happenings all the time. So there's no shortage of events to attend or open mic nights, or people to play your music. Once they got into composition, there was always a very fruitful kind of collaboration pool with like-minded individuals. It's just a great environment over there.
Like a corral, stable. Yeah. And first time I saw Berklee School of Music, it was the ID card on Richard Hell and the Voidoid record sleeve. It had Bob Quine's ID card. It's like, yeah, Bob Quine. Berklee School of Music. Yeah, I remember I got to record with him. It was a couple of years after this. And he told me the first guy I saw play electric guitar was Buddy Holly in Akron, Ohio, 1957. That's the year I was born. Yeah, trip. And everybody said, he's really mean. He's going to tear your head off. And he was the nicest man in the world to me. So don't believe that shit. Okay, so when you're over there getting educated, were you also Parallel Universe doing bands? You know what I mean? Like gigs and writing stuff. Not for class, but, you know, bands.
Not for like the first half there. Like I was a really serious student. Like I would, you know, practice, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day.
Whoa.
I was like, really into it, trying to, you know, get my jazz and fusion chops up.
Let me ask you your opinion. Then you're aware of Wes Montgomery. What's your opinion of him?
I love Wes Montgomery.
John Coltrane asked him to join his band.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
John Coltrane asked Wes Montgomery to join his band.
Oh, wow, that would have been something.
And here's what, you know, I read a book on him, and he played a tenor guitar until he was 20. He didn't play a six-string guitar until after 20.
Really? Oh, wow.
Didn't make his first album until he was 36. Yeah, incredible cat. You know, interesting story. And that thing with the finger. You know, not using a pick. So trippy. But what guitar players were you looking up to?
My guitar ideal at the time, and probably still is Alan Holdsworth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like I was into the modern kind of jazz guys, and kind there was Mike Moreno, Kurt Rosenwinkel,
kind of
Alan
synthesizer guitar, right? Didn't he get into that?
Yeah, like the headless kind of tiny guitars.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. I had one of his signature models for a while. It was a great guitar.
Wow. Okay, so not like the Jim Hall, you know, Kenny Burrell. Okay, but more of the like the. Now, would you say there's a difference between what you were listening to and what people call fusion?
Like I've never, like, it's when I hear fusion, it's like when people say like the word postmodern or something. It's like this catch-all term to me that I've never kind of narrowed down to what exactly they may mean. It means a lot of different things to me, but I don't know. I was just taken by the kind of outside playing that is one aspect of fusion, of kind of trying to stretch the changes and kind of challenge yourself and those that you're playing with into new kind of harmonic territory. Which I think is something Holdsworth is, you know, famous for doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but like everybody playing lead guitar, even if you're on the drums and bass, lots of notes.
Human beings,
it seems human beings, the more they do something, the more of more and more, they usually don't get more econo, right? They more and more and more and more. That's why bass is kind of trippy. Like, you get punished. You get so small. You play too many notes, you get very small. There's a justice there. So interesting. So, you say at first you didn't put together any groups, just prac for your studies. But then you start to?
Yeah, like, during that time, I mean, I've always also been into composition as well. So like during that time, you know, the first 3 years when I was at Berklee, I was also working on some kind of tunes that became my first album called Bocturnal. So kind of in my last year and a half of kind of Berklee, I, you know, got some players together and we started, you know, kind of rehearsing and got into the studio kind of in my last year there and, you know, started doing some local playing and playing down in New York as well.
I-95 tour. Maybe some Providence.
Exactly.
Maybe some New Haven. Yeah. Because, you know, when us Minutemen were first touring, we were thinking, God, New England, all those gigs so close. You know, because us on the West Coast, you know, our gigs are pretty far between. I-5 tour, right? Look, we're at the end of the first hour. But then we didn't realize about the winter. They got weather there.
Oh, yeah, it's so brutal in the winter.
Yeah, right, right. So be careful for what you wish for. We're at the first hour, April 21, 2023. This is Watt Peters with special guest Ryan Carraher. Hold tight for hour two. April 21, 2023. It's the second hour of Watt from Pedro Show.
almost natural distortion. Against your creator at birthday parties. Sing hymns to the induction motor and dance with a cane under a menu of possibilities. I wanted to fly from the roof and I fell.
Oh,
Watch for Pedro's show start off the second hour. Ryan Carr with I Wanted to Fly from the Roof and I Fell. Little Icarus theme, tema.
Yes.
Chas Smith after that with Distance. And then finally, Ryan Carr. These are some long pieces, people. Colors, he says, to the screen's black lattice. I love that. That's a great. When do you come up with the titles? At the end, beginning, or middle?
It depends, yeah. I mean, with that, with Colors, he says, to the screen's black lattice, that was, it's a quote from a David Foster Wallace short story. So it just, as soon as I saw that or read that, it just kind of inspired, you know, piece or like, this should be set aside for a title.
Yeah, the Infinite Jest guy, right?
Yes, yeah.
I asked that question because I got to start with the title or I got no focus. Everybody else, they always had it at the end. So I'm glad you're open-minded to do either way. And, like, the title was just sitting there waiting for you to bring the music, right? Okay. That's bitching. Now this, where, you know, this kind of stuff, does this come from your Berklee experiences?
Yes and no. Yeah, I enjoyed my time at Berklee, but, you know, it was very interesting doing, you know, entering into music as kind of academia.
Yeah.
And I was kind of very disheartened by it. About halfway through Berklee, I felt a bit kind of artistically constrained in that environment. And I don't know, I felt like I wasn't, like, giving... exploring something where I could kind of express myself. Like, I've always valued artists and looked up to artists like, you know, Miles Davis and Devin Townsend, who kind of always evolve, you know, whatever is kind of in their inner ears, what is expressed through their output. They don't kind of pigeonhole themselves.
No, not at all. And I'll tell you, Miles Davis, another talent, he knew how to pick bands.
Mm-hmm.
You know totally. What I mean? He's not one of these guys, I'm going to look good by having a bunch of lame guys play with me. I'm going to get the best dudes I can in my band.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, he knew how to create, you know, a community.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
And it was trippy around that, kind of evolved different kind of movements of music, you know, scenes and shit. Not that he invented them, because I think he would pick up, I know, reading his Quincy Troupe book, like Tony Williams, 17 years old, is turning them onto these cats. But hey, Ornette Coleman, yeah, you're making noise, but maybe I want to make noise like but I'll do it the Miles way, you know. Yeah, interesting kind of guy. So you weren't finding that at Berklee?
No, I mean, I found that, like, I mean, we were talking about Wes Montgomery before, and
yeah,
I do love
yeah.
Wes Montgomery, but it was just like at Berklee, like as a guitar player, you know, you were kind of judged based on how basically Wes Montgomery was like the litmus test of how good of a guitar player
oh, really?
You are.
I didn't know that, okay, so I just pulled because I just love the idea of John Coltrane asking this guitar guy to be in his band, and he said no. He said he thought the music was too hard.
That's wild. I want to know more about that story.
But there's
for
a
sure.
great cover he does of Impressions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you must know that one, right? It's maybe a year or two, because he died young too. Maybe a year or two after John Coltrane. But the whole idea of, you know, that shit goes on though, right? Like they use John Coltrane's giant steps to cut each other. You know who can do 500 beats a minute?
Oh yeah, I mean it's so Berklee. I don't know if they still do this, but they have a rating system where they assign you a number based on like how good you are. That number determines the classes that you can like sign up for. It shows up right next to your name on the course roster.
Oh,
so
man.
Like, it was quite like mechanical and impersonal, and they never tell you what the difference between say a 5 and a 6 is. It just seems arbitrary.
Yeah.
But like it was that kind of very uber competitive environment and trying to pigeonhole you. I mean, like there's like a, you know, like if you want to learn how to play something, you should steep yourself in it. And I enjoyed that aspect of it, but I kind of wanted more just based on how I wanted to express myself personally. So I got into the composing side of things, which was always something I did, but I moved away from the guitar and the jazz idiom into kind of more noisy classical idiom. And that's where kind of pieces like Colors, he says, to the screen's black lattice, which I did my first year of my master's, and I Want to Fly from the Roof and I Fell. That's where those kind of come from.
And you're not really composing on guitar. You're using, what, a keyboard, a piano?
I just sit at the desk and oftentimes make sounds with my mouth, so I'm sure that I'll be evicted from my apartment from neighbors' complaints.
I'm into that. I'm way into. You know, when you were mentioning that number shit with the Berkeley thing, I was thinking maybe early version of AI and algorithms.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, like, I've left Berkeley in 2016. I don't know if they're still doing that stuff. But yeah, it was kind of exactly that.
Here's something live you gave me, most of us. Let me play it. What for Pedro show? That chunk of music start off with most of us. Ryan Carr. Sorry. Damn what. Ray Shin out of Reno with Regret the Common Man. And then finally Ryan Carr again with You Gravitate. Yeah, and is this coming from the same kind of place you were in, like with the first chunk that we played before?
Yeah, like those pieces, especially Most of Us, which shout out to Rose Hagel, who's the vocalist that took on that
really
piece.
really good.
Oh, absolutely insane. But those pieces, like I've always been, as a performer, I've always been interested in performance psychology, specifically like creating areas through composition where I'm asking performers to play things that are, you know, basically physically impossible. I always imagine like, you know, a skilled carpenter, you know, they go into their workshop and they know where everything is. They know how every tool works.
Right.
And they have a sense of comfort and habit that they've developed with their environment and their skill. But yeah. I always imagine them walking into their workshop one day and everything's been rearranged and they have different tools and the instructions are in different languages. Like they're still a skilled carpenter, but they're going to struggle through the process that they would normally breeze through.
Yeah, and like
I think
the handles.
There's something special with that. Like you can, especially in music where you can see the performer as they're kind of struggling through music they may not see until they walk on stage, or that they may not be able to practice efficiently. And there's this element of vulnerability, as long as it's mutual that the performer, you know, is into that. I think there's like an element of beauty to that. And that's what those pieces are trying to kind of speak to or mess around with.
Well, like with Rose, how did you communicate the piece? Did you use traditional scores or the graphic scores? Is it just spiel, like pep talk? Or?
Yeah, so that score is actually pretty notated. So there's the text is, there's three different texts that are intercut. There's three different texts that are intercut. There's the actions of like the tongue, the throat constriction, like if it's normal, if it's ingressive, like she's inhaling, if it's kind of a metal scream, and the pitch contour are all separate, so they're all proceeding as if they're different instruments, but all occurring in some, you know, someone's a single vocal tract, and you can kind of hear that conflict as someone's trying to internalize this massive information that's on the page that, you know, a fraction of it comes out. And so it's different every time.
I guess intent is 9/10 of the law there. and then, because what you're looking for is, by setting up the situation, what will be the, you know, you're going to learn by doing.
Yeah, I mean, I always like being surprised, you know, as well, like, you know, for me, like, I don't want my compositions to kind of be, kind of set in stone or like a map. Like, I think I took that element from jazz of the improvisation and the, how everything kind of evolves from every time it's performed. Like, I think that piece has an identity. It's been performed by a lot of different vocalists. And if I was a blind listener, I could tell that it's the same piece. But there's always a different kind of characteristic, which I think the individual who's interacting with it, brings to it, which I think is, you know, one of the main things that interests me about music.
Yeah, there's not an end game that's designed to be realized. It's more like you're set up launch pads, springboards to see what happens.
Yeah, I like to think of my scores as like provoking something to happen as opposed to prescribing a specific thing to happen.
Right. Like everybody will wet their pants when this is done.
That's the goal, yeah.
No, it's a trip, man. See, that's exciting stuff about creative expression, you know. It's just, and then other people, if they ain't bit by that bug, they'll never understand. What's to it? You know what I mean? What's it? Aesthetic, right? It's aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
And not so much, well, maybe it is built on ethic, but aesthetic for sure. And if you ain't got that, maybe, yeah, you just got to wait till you develop it. We're at the end of the second hour. Really interesting, Ryan. Thanks so much. We're at the end of the second hour, April 21, 2023. Just Watt Peters, our special guest, Ryan Carr. Hold tight for hour three. April 21, 2023. It's third hour of the Watt for Peters.
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show. Start off the third hour with Ryan Carr with Nine Thermidor. Just talking about that off air, people. Thermidor's heavy month. You probably wanted to go by very quickly. After that, Jason Stein, Damon Smith, and Adam Sheed with The Non-Dimension of the Present. And then Pangolin. God, did I pronounce that right? Pangolin?
Pangolin, it's a type of animal.
Yeah, I know. It might have been. It's kind of like a armadillo, people. It's got kind of like armor, but it's an Asian. And it might have been involved with the COVID-19, like a bat bit one or something. It's one of the theories, anyway. But that's how I know this animal. I don't know if I'd be eating it at the wet market, though. Tell us about these pieces here.
Yeah, so those Nine Thermidor and Pangolin are both from my first record that I did kind of back in 2016 when I was just graduating Berkeley. It's a record called Vocturnal.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and like that was my first kind of recording experience of my own material.
So if I had it together, I would have played that first instead of in the third hour. Sorry.
It's all right.
I didn't know the chronology. I think I went in the length of the pieces.
It's all good.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So you were in just a whole different headspace at that time, right? Yeah, okay. But obviously, threads maintained through and the experiences. Okay, let's leave that East Coast part. You come out west again, right, to further your education. What do you do as far as, do you got bands going, or are you just immersed in the education while you're doing it?
Yeah, so, like, I moved out west to do my doctorate at the University of Washington, so, again, in music composition. And yes, like when I was doing that, you know, I finished last June, so almost a year ago, which makes me feel very old.
less younger.
But yeah, so I moved out here and I was mostly doing studies and like I was really immersed in composition at that time. And most of the composition work I would be doing would be for kind of European ensembles or ensembles back on the East Coast, which is, you know, the beauty of composing is that you can write on the West Coast for an ensemble on the East Coast.
Yeah, beautiful.
And especially during COVID, that was a very kind of valuable element of the being a composer that allowed me to keep kind of working.
And have you seen that develop, the way you make, communicate your pieces to people? You think it's evolved, especially during the situation?
Yeah, I think so. So, I mean, especially when I wasn't allowed to be, you know, in the same room during rehearsal, because usually I like to know the people that are playing my music. I don't like to write just for kind of instruments. Like, I don't want to write just for the violin. I want to write for that specific violin player.
That's great. That's great.
So that often involves, you know, a period of collaboration of, you know, going out to lunch or coffee with people and kind of, you know, understanding where they're coming from.
Yeah, you know, where you see that? You see that with some filmmakers. You could tell the part that they pick for that actor is based on what, the way that cat feels about that actor.
Totally.
I remember in Pulp Fiction, right, a guy I don't really dig, the action guy, that was a good spot he picked for him, Bruce Willis.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I could stomach, but for that sitch. And so I know what you mean. So when you remove that way, it's really abstract to connect with your performers.
It was, but I tried to try to embrace the abstraction, like during that period of, giving, limited instructions, seeing what, since performers had a lot of time to kind of marinate with the piece.
Yeah.
And, seeing what they would bring to it on their own and try to get to know them through that way, as opposed to prior to constructing the piece and giving them a piece that was kind of abstract and not talking to them too much before the piece. And once I hear the piece, kind of debriefing with them about why they made certain decisions. So kind of doing a reverse engineering type of thing.
Did you get surprised when you heard the things realized?
I did, yeah. So the most recent thing I did in that vein was down in Eugene in Oregon, which is where the Connect comes from. I was down there for their music festival. We did this piece called Rosetta, which instructs the performers to create their own language, like a legit functioning language.
Whoa.
That they only know.
Of course.
Yeah. And then what they do is they go on stage and they can only talk in that language that they've created, and they need to tell the audience a joke, and the audience needs to understand the joke for the piece to be done. So they end up using, you know, props and PowerPoint presentations, and they just walk on stage making these strange sounds. And I didn't know what the language beforehand. I was just there on the audience. I told them not to – I didn't want to see any rehearsals. I didn't want to hear anything about the language. And yes. It was very confusing, which I enjoyed.
Oh, right, right. That was great. You got a piece here called Gdansk I want to play.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show last music for this edition. Started the chunk off with Gdansk, Ryan Carraher. Then Eugene Chadbourne, Professor Eugene Chadbourne, Greensboro, North Carolina, with Snub Mosley Memorial. Finally, Ryan Carraher with Daherlog. Daherlog. Some kind of printing process, right, or something.
I think, like, it's a Daguerrelog, I think it is.
Okay,
it's like
yeah.
It's a neologism, a made-up word by a linguist.
It's a piece of linguistics, people. I'm an idiot. I'm sorry.
I don't know how to pronounce it either. It's not the type of piece.
There's something with a spelling close to that that's an early way of... It was named after a dude, some early photographic thing, and I just fucked that up. Anyway, what's next for you?
Currently, I'm working on a solo guitar record. I've kind of stepped away from the guitar recently for like the past few years. So I've been trying to rekindle my relationship with that through kind of exploring different sounds through a bunch of weird pedals and techniques I've kind of developed over the years. So that's the kind of main thing on the chopping block these days.
And can people find out about you on the internet? Do you have a website?
Yeah, RyanCarraher.com. So that's C-A-R-R-A-H-E-R for the last name. And everything's up there.
Right, R-Y-A-N too, people, if you're not used to that name. You're going to make a record, a solo guitar record.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, and where are you going to record it, at home or in a studio or what?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing the kind of recording on my own here at my place, and I'm going to probably give it to someone, who knows what they're doing when it comes to mixing and mastering. And then, yeah, I have a few friends that, have, label connects or run labels, so I'll do some label shopping when the time comes. But, yeah, it's been very kind of satisfying so far to kind of dive back into guitar land.
Yeah, and when I hear solo guitar but mixing, you're going to layer up or just, it's not going to be just one guitar?
No, so it's the rule, so what I've been doing is sometimes they're just, improvisations or something I compose that I play all the way through in one sitting. Other times I go through this kind of trove of improvisations that I've accrued, over the past year. And I find sounds that I like, and I chop them up and create these collages. But the idea, the limitation I'm giving is that even if I edit something together, in the DAW, it needs to be playable by one person. So if this was to be played, it needs to be playable by one guitar player with, pedals and or objects. So it can't be like a layered soundscape or anything like that.
Okay, yeah. And limitations are important.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Right, because it gives focus to the piece, to the work.
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually a very slow composer, especially, when there are no limitations. You just kind of want to bang your head against the wall because the kind of world is your oyster, but it's also kind of terrifying at the same time because you don't know which path to go down.
I've heard of nightmares. What happened with Steve Marriott, happened with Jimmy, a Seattle guy, right? They had too much control, creative control, and so they got nothing done. It was all these loose ends.
Yeah, like you keep like going down different paths and then backtrack, and you go down another path, and you want to go back down to the first path, and then you just abandon it, and then it's just a massive headache, and it's not kind of a pleasing experience. There's some limitations that challenge you, but also don't drive you crazy is the kind of sweet spot.
Okay. And when you get done, can I put an invite? Will you come on the show? We can play it and talk about it?
Absolutely. I love that.
Okay. The invite's on then. Thank you so much, Ryan, for being on the show, and I can't wait to have you back. People, April 21, 2023 edition of Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.